Hello! Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. Today is Wednesday, March 29th, 2023. I'm Carl James, joined by Cassidy Palmer and Chris Feeney. Well, we have another very positive week to talk about the Hoosier baseball team. After that last episode in which we got to cover an 8-1 stretch, this time we get to cover a 5-0 stretch, including a series sweep at home over the Ohio State Buckeyes. And after last night's home win over Kent State, the Indiana Hoosiers are now 15-0 at home. So it's been a lot of positives. Currently, obviously, leading the Big Ten, but only 8 teams have played. And so I say leading the Big Ten, but there's a little bit of an asterisk there.
Small sample size.
We'll not read too much into that just yet. Although we do have it up on the website, so if you want to look at the standings, I'm updating those nightly. I guess we'll just kind of dig into it. Chris, what's on your mind this week?
Well, absolutely the 15-0 is on my mind. The fact that it's never happened before, you know what I mean? They went back to 1985. They couldn't find 15 wins in a row at the Bart or at Sembauer, or I don't know if there was called something before Sembauer, but they couldn't find it. So it might seem a little strange to start a pod this way, but I'm doing it anyway. We beat Miami of Ohio 13-5. We beat Butler 13-2. We beat the Mastodons 15-1. We swept Bellarmine 5-3, 9-7, 13-3, 3-2. We swept Moorhead 6-5, 23-6, and 5-4. We beat Indiana State 15-5. We swept the Buckeyes 14-6, 9-6, 7-5. And we wrapped it up because there had been 14 wins. So we wrapped it up to actually give this group of guys the longest winning streak ever at the Bart against Kent State 4-3. Incredible. Okay, it's baseball. You're going to lose a game here or there, but apparently not this team. It's something like 300-70. I was trying to do the math. I figured I'd leave that to Cass, but I had it here. I'm pretty sure it's like 300-70 for runs scored. It's something crazy. Yeah. 308-63. All right. Cass is going to have to double check my math, but that's what I got. 308-63. No group has ever done it. Okay. This is a first, right? I mean, you got to honor it. You got to really look at it and say, a baseball team won 15 games in a row at home. Yep. It's not going to happen again for a long time, I wouldn't think. So you really want to, you know, give it its moment and understand that. Guess what? It ain't even over yet. Yep. Because, you know, we got plenty of home games to play. We got the Big Ten coming back. What is it, Iowa, right? The next home series. The midweek is on the road in between the Penn State. I can't think of where it is, but I know it's on the road. So the next home game is the Iowa series. These guys were already pretty jacked up for this Iowa series from what happened at Iowa with the national media, with the runs and everything. So to keep this streak going also, I think, is real cool. So I don't have a hat on, but hat tip, hats off to these guys. 15 in a row. It's special. And, you know, don't hold your breath that it's going to happen again.
I also want to give a similar shout out to the softball side because they have been doing equally ridiculous. I think they won 15 or 16 straight, just total, period, no matter where. Yeah. So they have been trending very good as well over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and swept a nationally ranked Maryland.
Maryland, yep. Yep. We don't talk softball much, but I did want to throw that in there too.
So besides the streaks, Cassidy, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I wanted to look at, I usually focus on offense a lot more because statistically it's more fun for me. But I wanted to take a look at the pitching this time around because we've talked a lot about the offense, and like Chris said, if you're putting up 300 something runs across 15 games, your offense is doing pretty good. But looking at the pitching, I really wanted to dig into pitching with runners in scoring position, because that really seemed to be a huge difference between Ohio State and Indiana over the weekend. Indiana was consistently hitting or at least being productive with runners in scoring position. And it seemed like Ohio State really wasn't. And it kind of, the numbers back that up a bit. Across the three games, Ohio State, the highest batting average they had with runners in scoring position was 200. And in that first game, it was actually just 188. So they weren't hitting particularly well with runners in scoring position. The one thing I did kind of check out a bit, though, was hits plus free passes over the plate appearances instead of the at-bats. And second game was actually great at 20% or 200 or whatever you want to call it, two hits in 10 plate appearances. In that first game, it jumped up to 35% or 350 with three hits and four free passes. And then the third game is a bit more on the small number side, but it was technically 50% or 500 for walks, HBPs, and hits because there were four free passes. And I looked at that a little closer. It was two walks in two different innings. A walk in an HBP in one of the innings, but a free pass, two free passes in two innings with runners in scoring position. Both of them did result in runs scored, which is not ideal, but they were also relatively isolated, which makes it a little bit better. And digging in even deeper on that Ohio State, the first Ohio State game, if you remove that first inning, which was rocky, the percent of plate appearances that with runners in scoring position that were a walk, HBP, or hit goes down to 17% from 35%. Take out that first inning and it was cruising the rest of the way. And that's really been a large part of the difference between this year's pitching staff to last year's. We've talked about the improvement in control, and this backs that up. It, yes, walks, HBPs, whatever are going to happen, but they're not snowballing anymore. They're much more isolated. You might get a run here and there with the IU offense backing them up. I'm not concerned about a run here or there. Yeah. I'd rather we not walk or plunk people home, but that's also not a grand slam, so I'll take that.
And this is the thing. Look at the number of freshmen that are pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you almost have to expect this every now and then with yes. this many freshmen pitching.
Oh, yeah. just underclassmen in general.
Well, that's what it was last year. We were getting the poor performances from people we expected to take the step up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So then it was like a double whammy. It was like, wait a mm-hmm. second, this guy was supposed to get better this year. And he's mm-hmm. the one walking the ballpark.
Yeah.
He's the one hitting people. And I know Cash, you were mentioning like no snowball innings. And, you know, there hasn't been, we led the nation in hit by pitches.
Right.
We were leading the nation in walks. It right. wasn't like we were kind of doing bad. It was insane.
Historically bad.
Right. So now I don't even think, I think I heard Renda say something like we were 10th in the Big Ten and walked. I was like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think we were below, we were out of the top 10 in the country last year. For
yeah.
Stuff
yeah.
Like
yeah.
So the improvement is huge. And Carl, you're right. These guys are young. We didn't even know what we were going to get. And they're the ones who are stepping up. And sure, there's going to, the first game, the first beginning is Saturday. You don't expect to ever happen. Let's be real. That was a little off the wall. But like, you are going to expect some bad performances. You're going to expect some walks, you know, and they overcame it anyway.
Yeah.
His six, we're going to get you anyway.
But I mean, here's your six runs. The next day,
here's three, and we're still going to come back and beat you.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
But no. Think back to 2014.
Yeah.
Kyle Hart started a game. Kyle Hart started a game. Walk, 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 granny.
Did that really happen?
That really happened at the bar.
It did.
I remember that.
Kyle Hart did that.
I forgot about that.
I did not remember that. I remember some rough first innings he did have, and then he would bulldog into like the eighth.
Yeah.
But I don't remember one that bad. But either way, you know what, Carl? This one was worse.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even have to put the bat on a ball.
Yeah.
No.
I would have rather that. What was going on there on Saturday morning or afternoon was just, no, we don't want that anymore.
No offense
to whoever was involved. You know what? Both players have come back onto the field and excelled since. And I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Coach went right back to them.
Right.
And honestly, Levy took care of his business the next four innings.
I was very happy to see that.
Right. So he didn't even need another performance to come back from what had happened.
Yeah.
But Evan really stepped up on his next performance.
Yep.
And that first at bat, though, when he walked the guy, I was like,
I was getting nervous. But
he stepped up. He was, locating after that. He got a couple of strikeouts. Yep. So
settled
all back I know down. Is that he showed up and he came back from a poor performance. They're all going to happen. But let's not have one like that happening.
Nope. Coach did say that that both of those guys are on the list for potential starters for Friday. So
really?
Yes.
Okay. But again, a start on Friday, from what we're understanding from Coach's theory, is going to be four innings. We're only going to have one real starter, it seems like, and that's going to be on Saturday.
Correct. That is correct. There is one starter for Indiana right now, and that is Sinard.
And that's fine.
On Saturday.
When we say starter, we're talking about length.
Opener.
We're talking about 100 pitches.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only one, and that's on Saturday. That's on Saturday.
And I like how he puts him on Saturday. I didn't think about doing that. You would think he would go Friday. I would go Friday, but that's right. You put it right in the middle because you don't know what's going to happen on Friday.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but it gives you the option to, if you have a guy that you only need for an inning, he can come back on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So you have more flexibility to use guys on Friday and Sunday. Knowing that the bulk of the Saturday innings are going to be taken care of by one guy.
Yeah. And I would like to point out that he remains the only pitcher on the staff with enough innings to count statistically.
Yeah.
But who deems that?
You have to pitch a minimum of average one inning per game.
Okay.
He is the only one.
That's just like a national thing?
Yeah. Okay. He's the only one who has enough innings to count statistically.
Well, easily then, if that's what it is.
Yeah.
But there are
he's in a bulldog.
There are 20 guys who have pitched.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, nobody's got the innings he has.
No.
But I was just mind-blowing. There were – at the end of last year, there were, what, 9 guys you expected to see any meaningful inning?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a few of them you didn't want in there anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he really restocked the arms, and you got to give Glant a lot of credit too. I feel like he's got a lot of new faces and new arms, and he had these guys coming in, and some of them weren't very highly touted.
No.
Weisdorf was. And I think they knew they had Craig Yoho coming back.
Yeah.
You know, they knew they had him in their pocket coming back. So that was good.
Yeah.
And Reinsdorf was very highly ranked.
Yeah.
But some of these guys were not these big, big recruits, and Glant is really getting a lot out of them.
Well, I mean, but Yoho, to make Yoho work, they needed to add an off-speed pitch, and that's that's what he's done. Once he's added an off-speed, now that crazy moving fastball of his is unhittable.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking for it, it's unhittable.
Right. He's making guys look silly.
Yeah.
He's making guys look like they never played baseball.
Yeah.
You watch some of the swings he gets?
Yeah, but the point is the pitch has both rise and run, extreme rise and run on a fastball. It's basically a major league pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's making dudes look bad. Had the strikeouts. Yeah, he's got the second most strikeouts. He's got 28.
Mm-hmm.
Luke has 47. Craig at 28 and Kraft at 22.
Yeah.
Those are our top K guys. So yeah, that just shows you how much. And Craig's got three wins already.
Well, and the part that stands out to me, again, we've talked about control a lot compared to his 47 strikeouts. Sonard's only issued 7 walks.
Yeah, no, he's been amazing.
This doesn't have the HBPs on it. I'd have to go back through and count all of them up, and I'm not doing that right at the moment.
He did have that momentary lapse after the ump, you know.
Yeah.
Blew it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And then the guy hits the bomb, and then he has the 4-pitch walk. So, yeah, there was a little lapse there. But you know what? You go from before that and after that, and he was money all game long.
Yeah. And
came zero, right zero HPPs.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, that's – I love seeing that. I love Yoho 28-5. Not bad. Kraft 22-8. Not bad.
Kraft, now, listen, Kraft's another animal. Kraft has some Johnny Franco in him, okay? Kraft is putting him on and leaving him there. Let's call it what it is. He's had some clean innings, but he's also had a lot of base runners. They don't score. So,
right.
I mean, I wonder what his whip is. His whip's got to be pretty high.
Let's see.
But his ERA isn't.
1.2, 1.1. Yeah.
It's not
for your closer, that's pretty terrible.
Not great.
It's not good. It's not good. For a closer, 1.2 whip? No. But you know what? He leaves them all on base.
Right. Well,
they don't score. It's great.
Yeah, because his – well, and some of it is –
it's walks
like
and hits. It's walks and hits. Call it what it is. It's okay.
It is, but it's not necessarily always bloopers, but it's singles. It's it's not doubles.
He leaves
it's not triples. It's not home runs.
If they were, he wouldn't have 6 saves. He leaves them out there.
Right.
He walks that tightrope. I love it.
But that's the thing to me. One soft single, I'm not too concerned on.
Yep. No, he buckles down with base runners on. It's great.
Yeah. Kraft strands 76.3 of his runners.
Oh, he strands them all, I feel like. I'm surprised it's not 100.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it were 100, then he'd have a 0 ERA, but
what has he got?
131.
Damn right.
Solid. Well, okay, that's not. I guess that's not. I'm trying to figure out what this number actually means. It's called an LOB percent. That's the way it was defined. It's the measures the percentage of base runners that a pitcher strands on base over the course of a season.
Well, it must be the entire season up until the point they do the math.
Well, and does that include inherited runners?
That's the part I'm not sure about. It's funny because I got interested in the statistic because of, and I have to just bring this up, and I know it's almost completely unrelated, but Kent State's Jordan Kalinda has the craziest statistics for a pitcher I have ever seen.
Now that whip was high. What was that, a 4 whip?
No, his whip is 0.45.
I just read it.
With a 4.05 ERA.
So that's what I saw was the 4.
How?
Okay.
Yes. How?
His LOB percent. And I've looked through multiple teams. The LOB percent is all usually somewhere between 50 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
His LOB percent is negative 53.6. I don't even know what this means. But
what?
But we were in the press box. We actually kind of dug into it. He's got like close to 14 innings. He's allowed 7 base runners. And one of those was by a hit by pitch. That's why his whip is below a half.
Yeah.
Wow.
And all but one of them have scored.
Yeah.
Damn.
And I'm pretty sure, and if you think about it, though, it's like, how do they score, though? And I think it was exactly like it was in last night's game, which is that they basically let him pitch until he allows a base runner. And then they pull him, and the next pitchers allow that guy to score every time.
Oh, God.
Yep. It has to be every time. It has to be.
Well, I was surprised that they pulled him, because outside of the base hit, which again was not a huge, it wasn't a double to the gap or anything. It was pretty run of the mill single. But he had been mowing them down up until
he was up Ellis, right? They pulled it to pitch to Ellis.
Yeah. Who got a single through the right side.
Yes. But it was, but it still, was, he retired. Like
you said, he didn't double the gap.
Yeah, he retired 8 in a row.
Yeah.
And now, but he only faced 8 total because that first one was a double play.
Right. Right. Yeah,
but I don't know. I wonder if that LOB percent, if you get extra credit for inducing double plays.
Double plays.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'll have to look into that particular advanced pitching statistic.
Yeah.
But it's just hilarious because like everybody on here is somewhere between 50 and 100, and he's at -53.6.
Well, then advanced pitching / fielding statistic that you're not ever gonna see. I'm really loving this. Fail the pickoff throw to first, and Cerny throws them out at third.
Yes.
I'm really liking this play.
You nailed that last night. What'd you say? That should be the strategy, right?
Yeah. That's how we need to catch base runners. Throw it away and catch them at third. Seems to be working.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like, it's such a rare occurrence. So for us to already have, what, 2 of those this season, it was enough to catch my attention a little bit.
That was great.
But that goes to the strength of this defense too. I mean, there have been some blemishes here and there, particular again, early season when it's cold, first games out on dirt, like, yeah, there are going to be more errors, but it's definitely tightened up over the last several weeks. And the errors that are being made are, I don't want to say reasonable error, but hustle errors, trying to make a great play and just not quite getting there, which to me are better than the make you look absolutely ridiculous errors. The dropping the can of corn pop fly, those things.
We left that to Ohio State last week.
Yes.
Dead center. That was great. Especially right where I was, because I was out over in that area, and you could just see, he literally closed the glove too soon. I was like, oh, run. That was such a, like, you nailed it again with the can of corn. It was such an easy catch. And he just, whoop. That was great.
That's what I refuse to say, can of corn, until it's in the glove and called.
Fran Healy did not believe in that. He works for Sports SNY. Sportsnet New York is what it was called back then. We had this guy, Fran Healy, all the time. Can of corn.
No, as soon as I say can of corn, it's going to be dropped. And so I'm like, yeah, I don't say can of corn until it's caught.
Well, they are going to have a test, though, this weekend. Not the most ideal weather in Happy Valley. And, of course, they're back on dirt. So,
yep.
We'll see how that goes. That was the location of the single worst defensive inning in my memory for this baseball team. So
I don't know that I. What year was that?
I think it was 2015.
15. I was going to say it had to have been a few
either
years
15 ago. Or 16, which was, by the way, the last time Indiana went to Happy Valley. It's been that long.
Wow.
But in that game, it was a doubleheader.
I remember that.
That was played because out between basically between torrential downpours, and Indiana had a big lead. It was like a 5-run lead, like the 7th inning. And in the bottom of the 7th inning or the bottom of the 8th inning, I forgot which one it was, they committed 5 errors, allowing 8 runs to score.
I forgot about that.
The 2015 team, they were really good in the field.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not on that time.
Tony Butler's on that team.
It was either 2015 or 2016. No. I don't specifically remember.
I'm looking.
Okay.
He was on both of them. So.
But yeah, it was
just. He only fields one position.
It was, so basically, it was like the only errors that I think they made the whole weekend. They were all in that one inning. They just had an absolute. Yeah. It was all 5 errors in one inning. Yeah. And it cost them the game.
Right.
And because I forgot who it was, but someone hit a grand slam for IU in that game.
Jeez.
Let's see. Let's try 15. It's not 16. Because we did not play Penn State in 16.
But yeah, so at least as of now, the schedule is 6 p.m. On Friday, 1 p.m. Saturday, noon on Sunday. I've been hearing there is rain in the forecast, so we will obviously do what we can to keep you posted via the website and various social medias on the schedule changes if they do happen.
And even worse in that one, Indiana was then ranked 21st. And it came in the seventh inning.
Damn.
Or eighth inning, scored 7 runs, 8 total errors.
8 on the game, 5 in the inning?
Wow. Yeah, all 8 of its errors in the fifth inning as a 7-1 lead turned into a 13-7 defeat.
Oh, there was it was 8 errors in one inning.
Uh-huh. The Hoosiers, who saw their nation-leading 12-game winning streak snapped, jumped out to a 7-0 lead and led 7-1 after 5. After that, nothing went right for Indiana.
They had a snowman. They had 8 errors in one inning.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the date. This is March 22nd of 2015, right?
Let me see. Yes.
Yeah, that was on my birthday.
I was sitting here going, how the hell does he remember the date of this game?
Well, actually, the reason I remember the date of this game, I forgot whether it was 15 or 16, but I remember it was on March 22nd because not only was it my birthday, but my cousin got married on my birthday. And I was following along in Florida, waiting for the wedding to start.
Are you still married?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it was like, yeah, it's like, oh, I got to check. Okay, everything's going great. Okay, they're still winning. Yep. And then I go back like 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, looking at it. So it was ground out to Tony, and then an error by Tony.
Whoa.
Which were so rare. Single to center, single to right. First runner scores. Wild pitch. So now second and third. Intentional walk. Hit by pitch. Triple to left field. Where are we? Single to center, single to short, F7, error to short. I'm not seeing all the errors in this inning. This is showing 2 errors in the inning, so now I'm confused. So evidently they weren't all in that inning? Looks like the seventh might have had some too.
They were all in one inning.
Well, here was another error in the seventh. Another error in the seventh. Third error in the seventh. Bunch of wild pitches. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 8 total, 5-1. Still, that's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not great. That's not, not a recipe to win.
And not going to happen this year.
No.
No, I wouldn't think
I'm
so.
I'm knocking on some wood.
I think they will be fine.
It's tricky though. So that's 2015 and we haven't been back since.
Yeah. Right. They were supposed to go back in 2020.
Yep.
Everything works in these 3-year, they're scheduled in 3-year groupings. So it can happen that you can be as far as 6 years apart with the regular scheduling. Yeah, but then if you were supposed to go in 20, those games got wiped. 2021 completely rewritten.
Yeah.
And then 2022 picked off right where it was supposed to be originally. So it caused a whole bunch of these schedule skips where, where you might end up playing the same team, like Indiana's been to Michigan, went to Michigan in 2019 and 21.
Well, and that kind of scheduling was how IU was the last Big Ten opponent to play at Alexander Field.
Okay.
They were, by the time IU played at Alexander Field, every other Big Ten team, including Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska, had played there.
Yeah. And it's so still
it's 3 year pods and then with a 2 year pause, and then you get your
And again, I don't know exactly when they picked up the rewriting the pods and stuff, and then of course it's all gonna change once you add the LA schools to it.
So yeah.
And they're gonna try well, and then also, I mean, there's serious discussions about expanding the number of weeks.
Which as they should.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
It's just you can't have just 24 conference games. It is hurting the league. The league needs more conference games. Doesn't need 44 conference games, but let's not do that ever again.
We've got some teams that can host earlier in the year now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take advantage of that.
Still going to be the issue of odd numbers, though.
Big Ten conference schedules can start way earlier now because those two can host.
Right. I'm just saying that every week there's got to be at least one team.
Actually, the math all works out fine. If you assume three programs can host the first, if you add 2 weeks, so you start 2 weeks earlier, you assume that three programs can host, and you know that UCLA can host, you know USC can host, and quite frankly, in a pinch, Indiana can host. I mean, Indiana's been playing home series those 2 weeks for years.
And I would say if they could arrange it, Minnesota.
Right. And I'd say the only caveat I have to that is that there are years that they host the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And they're not available.
Right.
But outside of those, and those are the years that I'd say then you bring it to the BART.
Yep.
And what you do is you send three other teams there. So you have – you know, so for example, at UCLA, you have UCLA say has a series with Michigan, and then you also send say Rutgers and Ohio State, and they play a series.
Oh,
no pod nonsense.
just straight up neutral
straight neutral site three game series. You're still playing series, but it's and I've done the math, and the way it works is that basically allows, so you have that at each site, so you have four teams at each site. That's 12. Of the 15 teams play. So that means week one, there's 11 weeks total. Week one, there's three byes. Week two, there's three byes. So you do the same thing again in week two. And then you go to, so that's six byes. And then you have 9 weeks left. 6 + 9 = 15.
Yeah.
Boom. That gets you all your byes. So then then week three, you start with one team. Each rotates the buys.
Yeah.
So you take care of your buys that way. And then, so you just have to work out the math to even up, you know, the fact that there's a few teams will have neutral site series in there from a home and away perspective, but that shouldn't be too difficult to work that math out.
Yeah.
And the real plus to this whole plan is the Big Ten tournament is at Dodger Stadium.
Hey, I'm still convinced that if, the Big Ten basketball tournament can be at Madison Square Garden in a state that technically does not have a Big Ten team.
Yep.
And the baseball tournament can be held at Busch Stadium in St. Louis.
Yeah, it could.
That's my argument. Although I think, honestly, if they could get it to match up with the MLB schedule, instead of Target Field in Minnesota, do the Chicago ballparks.
Yeah.
You've got two to pull from there. And so if you can make the schedules work, why not? I'm tired of the conference tournament always being on the edge of the conference instead of anywhere remotely central.
Well, it's going to be like right smack dab in the middle now.
Well, now it is. But no, and I do absolutely see the benefit of Big Ten tournament in Omaha as much as possible.
Yeah. I mean,
unless
it's just
Creighton steals it again.
and the Big East is not going to be able to, especially once you add the Western schools in, the Big Ten is is too big an animal. And the thing is, the league needs Nebraska to not do what it did last year. Nebraska needs to be good.
at least make there. The tournament.
They need good. To be there, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this. There were still more Nebraska fans than any other fan group at that tournament.
Uh-huh.
Even though they weren't there. I saw more Nebraska jerseys than I saw anything else.
Good for them for wearing the gear there. Good
yeah.
For them. I like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I will say Iowa's game. Iowa did show up for their own games.
Right.
But the point is, I having been there, I can say I think Omaha is the right location
yes.
for this tournament.
Yes.
First of all, they roll out the red carpet for the Big Ten, and part of it is it's basically they treat that the conference tournament as their dress rehearsal for the College World Series.
Right.
But that's cool for the Big Ten, is they get to be they get all the amenities that come with that.
Uh-huh.
It's a really nice ballpark. It really is. And you cannot discount. I'm serious. You cannot discount what Michigan did in 2019, mm-hmm. and the fact that they had already played an entire week on that ballpark, and when they came back 3 weeks later, they got to the final game of the whole thing.
Yep.
And
that's the big benefit.
Yeah. And even Eric Bockage said that. He said this was clearly an advantage. Playing the Big Ten tournament was an advantage when the College World Series came around.
Yep.
So
yep.
I think you put all those things together and as long as Nebraska doesn't fall out of the top eight again, things should be fine.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, why don't you go ahead and hand out some hardware?
Oh, we got the red belts. We only have 1 week of belts to hand out. What am I going to do? Usually it's 2 weeks. All right. First off, this is a strange one. I got to say, I have statistics for the players who are not going to win the belt. And you're going to be like, wait a second, how did that guy not win? But here's a person who's not winning an offensive Alex Dickerson Award belt. 5 hits, 6 RBIs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs scored. That guy is not winning the red belt, and that's Matthew Ellis. Like, you would think that with those numbers, you're going to win the red belt. And obviously a huge home run for Matthew give us the lead, you know, come from behind in game one. It was game 2 of the series, game 1 of the doubleheader. It was a moment. It really was. But Brock Tibbetts, I mean, come on. Yeah, he had 500 for the 4 games. I don't really know how to figure OPS, but according to the Big Ten, it's 1.339 OPS, which apparently is like Barry Bonds-esque. You know, I've had to look it up. You got 7 RBIs, 8 runs scored, 3 multi-hit games. And honestly, regardless of the whatever your cumulative numbers of the week, when we were down 6-0, he started the rally. When we were down 3-0 the next game, he started the rally. He drove into runs. He drove in the first set of runs in each of those games to get everybody riled up again, to get Josh Pine fired up again. He fires up everybody. All you got to do is get Pine started and the whole bench goes. So Brock really earned the Alex Dickerson Award this week. So now I'm going to give you some statistics for a pitcher that did not win the Joey Donato Award. 55 pitches, 10 outs, 5 strikeouts, 1 hit. Luke Hayden did not win the red belt. And you would think with that performance, he would have, right? Luke really came through. And we haven't seen Luke do this, right? We've seen him throw a couple of good starts on midweeks last year. We've seen him throw maybe a 1-inning relief performance. You know, this guy held the lead and coach kept going to him. I'm going to fully admit that I was like, all right, who's next? Who's next? Get Luke out. He did great. Let him finish with a, you know, a little pat on the butt and a high five and let's go to the next guy. No. Coach Mercy sends him out again and sends him out again. And really 55 pitches. I think that's the most. I don't think he's even thrown that many in those midweek starts. I could be wrong, but I feel like that's the most that I've seen him throw. And he was really, really good. But he doesn't get a red belt out of it. Sorry, Luke. Because Ryan Kraft does. 4 innings, a shutout ball, 4 hits, 3 Ks, 71 pitches. Okay? I was shocked he even came at the game. We weren't even winning yet. And I think coach just knew something, man. He knew that we had battled back from the six. I think it was like 6-4 when Kraft came in. And he did his live wire, tight wire act like we talked about before. He put runners on. And he, you know, he throws over and he does the pickoffs. And, you know, he does the running game. And he's really good. But if he doesn't have some Johnny Franco in him, I don't know. Matt Lloyd had it too, though. You know what I mean? And I really respected Matt as well. So you can put him on, Ryan, as long as they don't score. But Ryan Kraft really deserved the Joey Donato Award. So for defense, to me, the one standout was Josh Pine. I got to say, I feel like a broken record. I'm sorry to anybody who, you know, cares. But another great play at third. Another great tag at third. I don't know if he pushed the guy off third base, but either way, he was there to tag him that play.
Well, apparently that's legal now, so it's okay.
Oh, really? Okay. See, I didn't know it was, and I thought he might have given him the business.
Did you see the one of Tommy White at LSU?
No.
Shoved him. Totally shoved him off third base. They reviewed it and said, nope, he's out.
Okay. Well, then, Josh, good thing for giving him the chicken wing, because I honestly believe he did. But Josh really excelled once again. Cass has been keeping track of the belts, and I know Josh has a bunch of them. We'll send those out on Twitter another time. But Josh Pine gets the Tony Butler Award. Brock Tibbetts, the Alex Dickerson Award, and Ryan Kraft for the Joey Donato for this week.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess it is time I finally actually start talking a little bit about RPI. Just a little bit. I don't like talking about RPI a whole bunch, but it's just kind of cool when Indiana has the best RPI in the league. At least they did as of this morning. I haven't actually checked.
As of an hour ago, too.
Okay. And as of now, it's actually a little bit better position now. Indiana is national rank in the RPI is 27th. As some people have asked me this lately, and I will say that, you know, the magic number is somewhere between 40 and 45. The reason it varies is because of stolen bids, but, and again, it's not a precise number because RPI gets you in the ballpark of determining what the overall national seeding is going to be, but it's not the end all and be all. Just ask records from last year. There's other things that can go into, you know, determining whether a team makes the field for the tournament. But up to this point, that is, Indiana's done quite well. And part of it is just that the competition, that there was some questions. I mean, when Indiana played Texas, Texas did not look all that great. And Texas has just been absolutely crazy on fire since then. Auburn's been looking pretty solid recently. I'm trying to remember if they did. They did win their SEC series over this past weekend. They got swept before that, but that was Arkansas, so it's gonna happen. And you know, well, the other thing is the one midweek loss was to the number one team in all of RPI right now, so. The Kentucky Wildcats are number one in RPI right now. They are 22-3 on the year. That is just nuts.
And only one loss so far in two SEC series.
Yep. And a team from Mississippi has yet to win a game in the SEC. So.
And like I had mentioned at some point last week, Mizzou is surprisingly strong in the SEC at the moment. Although they did go from sweeping one week to getting swept the next week. But it was against South Carolina, who at the time was the number two overall RPI.
Yeah. So. Well, this sweeping business was all over the country.
Yes.
It was like almost every series everywhere turned out to be a sweep last week. Yeah. It was very weird. So the sweeping business. So keeping an eye on that, the Big Ten, it's really hard to tell right now. And you know, we're about to get into our picks here. You know, there's really all eyes in the Big Ten are on one series this weekend, and that is Maryland at Iowa. That's the series that several teams in this league have shown signs of being really, really good. Ohio State was one of those teams. Illinois has been one of those teams. Both dropped their opening series, so you just you just don't know. But I guess we'll go ahead and jump on into our picks for the week. So we've got Michigan is at Illinois. So I guess that's actually a pretty big pretty big series too. Michigan State at Rutgers. I've actually got a question on that one too. Minnesota at Ohio State. Northwestern at Purdue. Yeah. yada. And then of course Maryland at Iowa. So I will. How about Cass? Cass finished 2-1. Cass is not in first place right now. Josh,
no, not.
Josh swept the week. Josh. Talk about sweeps.
There you go.
Yeah, and as Kyle Schwarber says, we want sweeps. We want sweeps.
Yes.
And Josh got his sweep last week. I don't know Josh's picks yet. He hasn't sent them to me. So we'll. Josh's picks will be up on the site once we have them. But Cass, what do you have?
Okay. Well, let me get the right thing. So I can't remember where we were starting, but I'll go with that Maryland Iowa series, because that's a big one. I am going to go with Iowa on that one. I think it'll be close, but I think home field lean there will be a thing. And then the one that I figured would possibly be the easiest of picks, I am picking against Northwestern, because that it's just a rough year for them.
But Cass, they have a pitching coach now.
They do, and that's important. But I think they probably would have preferred to have the pitching coach, you know, in the off season.
Yeah. I still don't think they have a hitting coach yet, but they've got a pitching coach.
I can't not laugh at that. And then where was I looking? Minnesota, Ohio State. I'm going Ohio State, because even though we just swept them, I think they are better than Minnesota and they're the home team.
Cass is going out on a massive limb here, folks.
Oh yeah.
Miss.
Yeah. And then this one was closer than I thought it was going to be, but I'm going to lean Rutgers against Michigan State. Again, just that little bit of a home lean. And then I did go back and forth on the last one, but I'm going to stick with Michigan.
All right.
I think Michigan will do it.
Chris.
All right. Two are easy. Minnesota and Northwestern are bad baseball teams. I'm not taking them. Okay. So they're out.
You got burned on that enough last year, right?
I did. I'm being honest with you. I did. So they're out. Ohio State and Purdue, I'm going to take. Illinois stepped up on Sunday and won that game. And I give them a lot of credit for that. So I think I'm going to take them against Michigan. They showed a lot of heart in that Sunday game. I really figured they were going to get swept. I took Nebraska, and I had already won the series, so I didn't care. But for them to win the Sunday game, I thought that was, you know, that's big. We've stepped up and won Sunday games, right? At Auburn, at Texas. You could easily just mail in the weekend, and they did. So I'm going to take Illinois with a little momentum at home, right? That's at home, Illinois home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Versus Michigan. So that helps too. I got to tell you, I think the New Jersey run is over. Fairley Dickinson is out. Princeton is out. And I'm very disappointed in Rutgers here. Can I preface this? You have lights now. They are playing. an afternoon game on Friday to not take advantage of these lights. I don't like this. I think it's bad mojo. It should have been the opening game on Friday with lights. All right. The Saturday and the Sunday games are like 1 o'clock. So that doesn't even matter. They could have played a nice 6 p.m., right? No, they don't do it. So bad mojo. I'm going Michigan State. And I mean, when the season started, I kind of had your back, Carl. I felt Iowa was really the pick of the conference. It really seemed that way. I'm going to go with them over Maryland.
Okay. You are picking Iowa.
I am.
Okay, the way you prefaced that, I thought you were going the other way. I was confused.
No, you know, I think it's a coin flip.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just going off of what I thought, I don't know what, 2 months ago, whatever it is, 6 weeks ago, I'm going to go off for that, that Iowa is going to take that series. You know, I know Maryland's good at home, as much as I don't like them, but that is at Maryland, right? Did I have it written down right on pencil? Okay.
Oh, it is? I thought it was at.
No, it's at Iowa.
Oh, it is at Iowa. Oh, so it's not even that crazy of a pick then. Yeah. Okay. Right. I thought I was taking a road team here and I wanted to be like, listen, I'm going to take it. But hey, I'm going to stick with them. I got Iowa.
All right. So for me, I am I'm going out on a big limb here and I'm picking all of the home teams.
Okay.
That's almost what I did.
Yeah, I'm actually only different than one for each of you. So, yeah, Illinois, Rutgers, Ohio State, Purdue, and Iowa. So this is my pick. So yes, I am disagreeing with Cass by picking Illinois instead of Michigan. I am continuing my faith in the Jersey Boys. So,
all right.
Now I didn't check the time of the game. I will admit I didn't.
I'm telling you right now, I'm
disappointed by that too.
I was going to take Rutgers. I was so excited. I'm like, oh, the first night game, and then it wasn't.
I could see them wanting to. I could see them wanting to push another week or two on the scheduling to be same one night.
Don't care. Nope.
Hey, at least they've got the video board.
That killed my pick. It was circled Rutgers until I realized they were wimping out with the lights. Crossed out.
All right. So at least we have five different series. Okay, not really, but it's back to three again. But
it is.
I'm going to laugh if Minnesota or Northwestern does something.
Yeah.
Well, if it's anybody, let's hope it's Northwestern.
Yeah, we'll probably and probably they probably will win and Josh will probably pick them. So
that's fine. If Purdue loses, we win anyway.
Good point. All right. So that's what we've got going on here. Obviously, we're not picking for Indiana at Penn State, which is the series that we are most focused on. And again, the only announced pitcher for Indiana is going to be Sinard on Saturday. The openers for Friday and Sunday have not been announced yet. We've been told that heavy likelihood that Seti Manase will be the Sunday opener. But I think they're leaving open the potential for him to pitch in one of the other games if the need arose before Sunday. But you know, when we look at the way this team has done over the last bit, that's not really been a concern. Again, I mean, it's still just mind-boggling. They've got 20 different pitchers have thrown in games. And I think the minimum inning count is two. So it's not like a guy just went and faced like one batter and didn't pitch again. They've all actually thrown something significant. In that group. And I mean, just, you have to be impressed with what they've done to put this pitching staff together.
Absolutely.
To be able to piece things together the way that they have has been very, very impressive. And now the offense is starting to come along. You know, obviously I think the biggest deal from this past weekend, was how well they did against Isaiah Coupe.
Yes.
That you had going in a very elite arm, and they got prepared for him. They knew how to see, to read his spin, and they clobbered him. Absolutely clobbered him.
Yep.
And for me, what I'm looking, oh, go ahead, Cass.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was a little nervous after that first inning, just to give up 6 runs and then.
Oh, you were a little nervous? You were a little nervous.
Set down.
It was 6-0 before we got up. You were a lot nervous.
In the first inning, I was not thrilled, but I wasn't that nervous because I've seen this offense. But when they were set down 1-2-3 in that bottom of the inning, it was like, yeah. Oh, this could be bad.
Yeah.
But
yeah, but then boom, right away. Then when they get into the second inning and
Rock hit the home, he put it in the wind tunnel.
Yeah. But it was the best. It was the best performance of the whole weekend. Was against Coupe. So
10 runs,
and it wasn't like they did bad. They did poorly against, you know, almost anybody else. There was that one reliever. I forgot his name. That one reliever. He only saw an inning on Sunday. That was the most impressive arm I remember seeing. But I think it was like sometimes you see those freshman pitchers that are just like, wow. Remember that kid at LSU? I think he ended up getting drafted.
He ended up the Saturday starter the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But boy, that was an impressive arm. So it's kind of fun seeing some of these talents, but that kid was good. And then offensively, for me, what I'm really seeing is we had a lot of these games where you'd have – where the bulk of the hits would come from one guy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Phillip isn't getting quite as many 4-hit games.
Not just 3 hits.
Yeah, just 3. Just
he's come down to like he's getting a walk now and 3 hits.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because you're not hearing a ton about Phillip. You really aren't. He's just, you know, quietly hitting .440 with a 1.170 OPS.
Yep.
Just ridiculous.
For those of us old fans of open wheel racing, he's the Bobby Rahal of, you know, he basically wins a championship by finishing second place in every race.
Well, I said it last week with the red belts. He had 52 total bases. The whole team had 300 at that point.
Well,
so we were talking about him.
Even looking at stolen bases.
He's got like 15 of those too, right?
10 for 13.
Oh, only 10.
The next closest in attempts is Cerny at 6. He's 5 for 6.
Yep.
And Glasser's 10 for 13.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got the total bases now. Well, this was before the midweek game. It was 60-48. He built the lead over Brock. 60-48. And Brock had an amazing week.
Yeah.
Yep. It's now at 65-50.
Yeah. Yep.
Big Ten player of the week.
Right. Right. Yeah. And Devin Taylor got freshman of the week again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back to back.
Yep.
We knew Devin was going to be a player. We knew. We just didn't know where he was going to play. That's what it was. We knew he was going to be a stud.
His OPS is 1.223 right now.
Yep.
Nice. I think he was on another one of my lists that I have here with Devin Taylor. What was the other list? I don't remember. Oh, he only had 47 at-bats compared to, you know, the other guys who have 90 and like 75. Mm-hmm. was hitting 404.
Yeah.
So if he gets some more ABs, you never know. It might even go up.
Yep. Well, he's at 380 right now.
Yeah,
but I did these lists on Monday. So.
Yeah, but his OPS is actually higher than Phillips. So
wow.
Yeah,
well, we have had some freshman stars. I tell you that Cerny's been so impressive too. We talked about it last week.
Yep.
This is the number that is crazy impressive for Taylor because you notice he's got half the at bats of the rest of the starters. Most the starters we're looking at here,
right.
Phillip has 16 walks. See Brock. has Bobby, Carter, and Matthew all have 15. Devin has 13.
Yep.
And you have video of like 10 of them.
Yes, I do. It's almost automatic. I hit record, Devin, yep. Taylor walks.
Every time. Death taxes and Carl videoing Devin Taylor walks.
Walking.
Oh no.
In my copious free time, I will somehow put a giant montage together of Devin Taylor walking. So
yes. But even looking at he's got 16 RBI. Carter's at 17 right now. Bobby's at 15.
Oh, yeah, I sent those out. Tibbetts 27, Glasser 20, Pine 19 for the top numbers. I should have kept going because that would have really showed Taylor's impressive number, but I only put the top three.
Yep.
No, and what he's doing is super impressive.
Yeah.
Walks and RBIs, I mean, there's money right there.
Yeah, and the walks are really coming from the fact that right now the book on him is just don't pitch to him.
Yeah.
That's the book on him right now. It's just don't pitch to him. And he's taking his walks. Now I say that it's not just that because he's walking on a lot of 3-2 counts and he's fouling pitches off to get those fourth balls in a lot of cases. Now the thing is he's not getting anything to he's no longer getting pitches to square up. that aren't massive mistakes. So
And there's starting to be some video, all that good stuff.
Right. And you are starting to see, you know, a few more of those guys that can do it, that can locate, you know, a slider down and outside. You know, specifically if it's a left-handed pitcher that can locate a slider down and outside. And, you know, there's going to be ebbs and flows to all of this. But I think we're all pretty convinced that Taylor's we'll get past that once it hits and he'll figure it out.
Well, and I find it fascinating because I was looking back at the walks after you had said something. Mm-hmm. Actually in this last week, so the Ohio State through Kent State, almost all of them were 4-pitch walks.
Okay.
That backs Carl up for sure.
Yesterday, 4-pitch. Didn't have one in the third Ohio State game. In the second, he had 2 4-pitch walks. And then in the first game, is where it's a little different. He had a 5-pitch walk and a 9-pitch walk.
Yep.
Fouled off 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, as I say, they do decide to pitch to him. And in part of the trial, so you get a guy who can really locate and is, you know, able to locate those, paint a corner type situation. And he's just foul it off. And eventually they miss a zone and he walks.
Yep.
So,
but
just the maturity to do that, to take the walks, you know, to not have a 4-pitch walk. I mean, because probably some of those pitches were somewhere close, and we know we've seen their guys are just, hey, I don't want to not hit, and but the maturity for a freshman to do that and then, you know, do it both ways, you know, take the 4-pitch walks and the battle walks, and he's had several of those battle walks, maybe not as much recently, but when people were still pitching to him, he had a lot of those battle walks. Cool. All right. What? Any other topics that we want to get off of our chests before we call it a week?
Well, I have some stuff sent in from Pro Bowl Hoosiers with opening day starting on Thursday. Don't know when you're going to listen to this. We are recording it on Wednesday, so it is tomorrow. But he wanted me to really shout out Cade Bunnell. He had an amazing spring training with the Atlanta Braves. He sent over some stats, and he was able to let us know exactly who got in the games with the spring training clubs. And that's Matt Gorski, Elijah Dunham, Grant Richardson, okay? And for pitching, who got on the field for the spring training clubs is Andrew Southfrank, Caleb Barraga, Jonathan Stever. And not only got on the field for the spring training club, but made the squad is Timmy Herron. So he is on your opening day Cleveland Guardian roster Timmy is, you know, a local guy here from Indiana. His father is still coaching football here in the state. And Timmy was his quarterback when he was there. He was a great, quiet, humble young man when he was here. And to see that he's going to be standing on the foul lines, as they do, you know, for the national anthem tomorrow, I think is really special. And I don't know if I would have picked him. You know, I think the first time I saw him throw was fall ball. I guess it was the next year, you know, when he had showed up, you know, how the guys show up to get the fall ball before their first season. And to me, he was honestly this tall, awkward kid. That's really all he was. I was like, you know, he's tall, he's lefty. And to think what he did, and he went games against Louisville, games in the NCAA tournament, all the big time spots he, you know, games he threw for Hoosier baseball. And he gets drafted and he goes in to pursue his dream and that he's going to be on the opening day roster. I mean, I don't know when their game is, but let's just say 24 hours from now, you know what I mean? Congrats to Timmy Herron, to him and his family. It's going to be a real special day for him. As far as the standouts that didn't make the team, like Pro Bowl Hoosier said, Cade Bunnell was the star in that category. If you want to follow our guys as they go through the minors and the majors, if you're not already, it's at Pro Bowl Hoosiers. He follows every sport. Like, he'll follow women's basketball in Germany. Like, but he also follows the baseball players. So we might even be lucky enough to get him on the pod to give us some updates about our pros. You won't see him. He's a bit of a shy, incognito guy. Maybe we'll just throw his logo up there like we did for the fantasy draft. But, you know, congrats to all our guys, you know, whether they're starting a AAA, AA, single A, whatever the case. You know, I know it's a dream that they're following that they really want to accomplish. And you know what? Whether they make it to the major leagues or not, you know, as the minor league starts, that's their job right now. They're not sitting at a desk. They're not doing any of that. Maybe they'll do that later. But for now, they're playing ball, and that's pretty cool. Also wanted to shout out Joel, who I spoke to a little bit at the ball game, was a fan of the podcast, came up to me. We were talking a little bit. I really appreciate his kind words. He said that he listens to it more than watches. He listens to it on Spotify and stuff like that. Also, Craig, who gave a nice kind words over at the we were hanging out by the picnic tables on Saturday, hoping for a Matt Ellis bomb, but Matt decided to go oppo and mess the whole thing up. But me and Craig, when I got that ball. But thanks, Craig and Joel, for the kind words at the ball game. Nice to hear from people who watch and listen to the show and all that good stuff. Really a fun time at the park this weekend. I got to say, I look forward to getting back for the Iowa series. Hopefully some warmer weather. We get our baseball cards Friday. Oh, no, excuse me. Saturday, we got our baseball cards. Sunday, they're having the Easter egg hunt. It should be a fun weekend. A lot of promotions and stuff like that when they get back from the road trip. But good luck to all our Pro Bowl Hoosiers, and thanks for the kind words from the guys at the game.
All right. Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. You can check out all of our coverage on iubase.com. I will be live blogging via, obviously, I'm not going to be there, but I will be live blogging based on the television and radio broadcasts. B1G Plus and Austin Render, I will be following to provide live blog information on this series, and obviously keep everybody posted on any changes that could happen if weather were to interfere with any of the specific start times. So that will do it. We'll also have our B1G Pick'em tracking for the weekend will be up once we get Josh's picks as well. So for Josh Bennett, Cassidy Palmer, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.